week-long teacher strike in Los Angeles has ended. Their union has approved a tentative deal with the district, which means they'll head back into classrooms Wednesday. More than 30,000 LA teachers went on strike January 14th after 2 years of contract negotiations and over a year of working without one.
We may be coming to the end of January, but there's still one word on everyone's lips.
Vegan.
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 Vegan. Veganuary.
With around a quarter of a million people across the world signing up to Veganuary this month, agreeing to ditch meat and dairy for a plant-based diet, veganism is fast gaining traction. That's helped it become a global market worth more than $4 billion. With that value expected to reach $7.5 billion by 2025, it's no wonder restaurants want their portion of the action.
This is how you become Danish. A handshake with an official is now a compulsory last step on the naturalization process. These nine newcomers are the first to do it, in this case with the immigration minister. A handshake is an important part of Danish values, the government says, and no one who refuses can be Danish.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's January 24th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Thanks for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. We will have the latest on news, traffic, and weather throughout this hour. And on the program specifically today, it is Thought Leader Thursday. Don Lloyd is here from Associated Bank. We're going to have a good conversation about world economic growth. And some numbers from the world financial markets this morning with Don. We'll bring him in momentarily. And a little bit later in the program, at about 5:40, you'll want to stay tuned for this. Grant Easterbrook will be here. He's the co-founder of Dream Forward, a 401k plan provider. What 401k savers don't know about their 401ks. Grant's company has started using AI to help investors, and they've been gathering some data about what we all know and don't know about our 401ks, and you'll be surprised to hear some of this stuff. We'll bring in Grant again at about 5:40 this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the opening bell rings this morning after Wall Street closed out Wednesday in the green following a round of strong corporate earnings. The Dow Jones Industrials rose about 171 points yesterday as IBM, United Technologies, and Procter & Gamble all posted better-than-expected results. The NASDAQ gained about 5 points. The S&P rose about 6 points. This morning, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street, with Dow futures up just a fraction. NASDAQ futures were up more than 0.5%, nearly 0.5%, and S&P futures were up nearly a quarter this morning. Around the globe, in Europe, markets are mixed. In London, lower, and in Germany and France, higher, nearly 0.75% higher in France. And in Asia, markets are mixed, with the Nikkei lower and everything else higher. The Shanghai up nearly 0.5%. Same story for the Hang Seng. And oil is trading at the $52.57 a barrel, which is down about 5 cents. Couple of stories before we get going this morning. World leaders are expressing concern about the global economy at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. German Chancellor Angela Merkel gave a speech at the forum in Switzerland yesterday and said that she has grave concerns about the world's state of affairs. Merkel says there are a number of disturbances and a certain amount of disquiet in the international system as a whole. In addition, a leader of one of the world's top advertising group called 2019, a year of confusion. A security expert says more than 24 million mortgage and bank loan documents have been leaked online. The documents reportedly found online after a server security lapse and represent tens of thousands of loans and mortgages from some of the biggest banks in the U.S. According to TechCrunch, the server had more than a decade's worth of data, including highly sensitive financial and tax documents. It's believed the database was exposed for 2 weeks. We hope to get more information throughout the day as more of this becomes available. And Chicago-based Boeing has tested its first autonomous air taxi, flying transport with no pilot. The test was carried out Tuesday near Washington, D.C., and saw the 30-foot-long prototype take off, hover, and fly around for a minute. The company and its competitors are hoping these small flying vehicles will become a crucial part of transportation in the future. Boeing is aiming to have air taxis available by the early 2020s. It is Thought Leader Thursday here on the Opening Bell, and we're happy to have Don Lloyd with us in today from Associated Bank. Don is the SVP of Capital Markets, where he oversees the foreign exchange and does all kinds of work with derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning.
Thank you. Half expected to see you in Davos, but no, you're not. You didn't get the Switzerland ticket either.
Well, if Davos is a set of pajamas, I was probably in there with all the phone calls I've been getting all night long. Right. But so my Davos pajamas are out. But no, right. I wasn't able to go to Switzerland this year.
Yeah, and so. We've got the snow here, so I guess we're kind of there. You know, it's kind of the same, right? A little bit.
Getting closer.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about that because there were a couple of reports early going in the early days of Davos. And by the way, this is the World Economic Forum, and it's held every year. They're all the muckety-mucks get together and talk about the economy. The International Monetary Fund and the world economic situation talking about global growth that's slowing. Some concerning numbers, or did we expect this?
Always concerning when it slows, but it's not, you know, out of the norm. I mean, you know, something to talk about. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the whole topic of this economic forum is, you know, shaping a global architecture in the age of the fourth industrial revolution. Can you get any broader than that?
Yeah.
You know, and these types of communication, I think, are very, very good. Then you have all the back channel discussions that are going on where I think the real value is, and slowing economic growth and how are we going to approach that as a global economy and a world economy and partners in our world. Let's talk about how we're going to get through all of that. So, you know, are we looking at a recession? Are we looking at slowdown? You know, right now, I think consensus is very much of a slowdown, not a recession, not a global recession by any stretch of the imagination. So I think in that regard, if you put it in the right context, nothing to really worry about. The problem is that you've got key leaders that aren't going to be there. So how much of those discussions are really going to occur that are going to have any meat to them or substance to them?
Yeah, I want to touch on a couple of the reasons behind some of the global growth estimates being shrunk. One of them is, these are regulars that we've been talking about, the ongoing trade disputes, concerns about climate change, climate risks, increasing debt. Those are three of the big ones.
Yep. Those are the three hot topics that they always talk about at Davos, you know, with climate change and then the deficits or whatnot. You know, the deficits are funny. You know, deficits aren't important until the market thinks deficits have become important. And we certainly haven't seen the market concerned about that over the last 10, 20 years, you know, maybe even 25 years. But take a look at micro deficits, whether it's Greece or whatnot. I mean, Greece didn't become a problem with their debt until the market woke up one day and all of a sudden it was a problem. Sort of like cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
You know, is $20,000 too high? Well, it is until the market decides it's too high and now we're going to come back down. And world debt or individual sovereign debt is very much like that. It's not an issue until it becomes an issue. And so far, it hasn't been an issue. And is it on the horizon? Nobody seems to talk about it or care about it. The markets certainly aren't pricing it in. But just like Greece, it can happen very, very quickly. Usually takes a big event to occur, but and then the other things that are going on in Davos, you know, the other two that you mentioned, climate change, we're always talking about that. They're still arguing whether it's a real effect and or not a real effect, you know, or what's really causing it. So, you know, we'll see what comes out of Davos. I don't expect much.
Right. Back to the debt part of this, I saw a figure that I hadn't seen before. The International Monetary Fund put global debt at $244 trillion. Put that into perspective for us, if you can.
The revenue that's generated from our tax base is about 16% of GDP. Okay. Now, when you take a look at the United States, if you take a look at the world revenue that's thrown off to sit there and address those deficits, it's a smaller percentage. If you just take a look at the United States, if we had another 10 years of employment the way we do and tax generation at 16 to 17% of GDP, it would take 10 years just to have the debt, to cut it in half. Mm-hmm. 10 years of that. Now, we're already 10 years into a boom.
Yeah.
Okay. We're already 10 years into expansion. Do we think we can really get another 10 years of growth and expansion out of this, or we can just start to begin to cut this thing in half?
Right. And that's just in half, by the way. That's just cutting it in half.
That's exactly right. But again, you know, I'm old enough where, you know, I can remember when the deficit was in the billions, not the trillions. And we were just like beside ourselves that, you know, how, what do you mean we went through 100 billion, 500 billion in debt? And now we're in trillions. And that doesn't seem to matter. But at some point, where does the market wake up and say, this is beyond sustainable? I don't even know what comes after trillions, to be honest with you. Where do you stop this whole thing? But the market doesn't seem to care. We don't seem to care. No one really is too concerned about it. Life goes on.
And that's the thing that I think is important here. Why don't we care?
Well,
I mean, what's at play there?
To me, it's sort of like the ostrich with the head in the sand.
Is that it?
Maybe if I keep my eyes closed, it will go away. but it doesn't go away. Yeah. I mean, this will resolve itself. Now, I've been saying that for 20 years. This is going to resolve itself one way or the other. Hopefully, we can find a way out of it. After 20 years of this, I don't see us finding a way out of it with any stretch of the imagination. It's going to resolve itself. The farther we go into it, the more dramatic that's going to be. And to me, it's pretty dramatic right now. I mean, I wouldn't want to be a 20 or 30-year-old out there, you know, running around in this world and, you know, with a mortgage and, you know, raising kids and family and whatnot.
Student loans, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sort of at the end of it. You know, so I can sort of hunker down and maybe weather the storm. But it's sort of frightening what's out there.
It's not going to just disappear, though.
No, can't disappear. I mean, but it can't keep going the way it's going. I mean, I don't see a solution out of this other than a bad solution, to be honest with you.
And what would that bad solution be?
You're going to see a lot of unemployment. You're going to see very much of an economic shock that ripples through not only this country, but this world at some point. What's going to trigger it is going to be the big thing. And now there's really nothing on the horizon to trigger it, so we can continue to operate this way for another 10, 20 years, for all I know. I mean, like I said, I have sort of been in the camp of concern, you know, for 20-some-odd years. And I've been proven wrong every single year. And at some point, you know, I sort of fall into sleep just like everyone else. But you know, the answer is going to be, you know, whether it's hyperinflation or inflationary times, or certainly a huge devaluation of your currency, it's going to result in unemployment. It's going to result in, you know, whole shifting demographics because of it, which, you know, we're not exactly a nation of what I consider the tough people and the frontiers people of the 1800s, which sort of moved, you know, we're a bunch of, you know, tough old beggars that would move to where the jobs were and could weather the storm. I mean, we've sort of gotten a little bit soft and comfy.
Yeah, our smartphones go out and we start panicking.
Right. So, you know, if I can't get up and get my Starbucks and come into work, you know, and just the whole idea of uprooting my family and moving to another job, you know, that's not what it was 30 years ago or 40 years ago, where that was just commonplace. You did it. You know, nowadays, everybody sort of likes their little bubbles.
You know, every once in a while, I'll hear critics say, well, that explains, you've just explained why their philosophy or their belief that people are just getting as much as they can for themselves as possible right now, knowing that all of that's coming.
What have we raised? What kind of kids have we raised? Yeah. Who's at fault, really? You know, I look at my generation and then, you know, love my kids. But what have we done? But the U.S., you know, it's $19.4 trillion of GDP just in the United States. You know, that's a big tax base that can be pulled out of there. You know, and that's sort of the go-to of the people who aren't concerned about it is that, well, you can always raise taxes. We can always sit there and raise taxes and approach it that way. Yeah, but that too has, you know, it's pitfalls, you know. I mean, that's going to have a knock on economic expansion and freedoms and things that we're used to today, and kids going to school, and you know the type of house you have. But you know, a $20 trillion economy is a pretty big economy. You know, China, the closest one to it, is 12.2 trillion. So you know, there's still a big gap between us and number two. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's not counting the European Union as one big block. You know, I mean, you break those guys out as individual countries. So yeah, we do have a taxing base that's there, and to some extent, that is a backstop, and it's there. I don't think you really want to look at putting that into play, though.
So how are these global growth reports impacting the markets over the last few days?
Certainly the market has been in a volatile state. It all has centered around rising interest rates. Are we going into a recession or an economic slowdown? That has sort of rippled and continued into 2019. Not to the extent that it was in the fourth quarter of last year. For some reason, you know, the ripples are starting to diminish and go and sort of die down a little bit. There is a concern that we are going into a slowdown. not a recession, but a slowdown. Again, I'm sort of in the other camp. You know, I see the consumer still fully engaged. I see the consumer with a lot of work choices that are out there. And I don't see a bubble. I don't see a bubble anywhere like you had back in 07 and 08 when you had the big financial disaster and the economic slow crisis that you had back then. So with that, I think a lot of it is our own paranoia to some extent. 10 years into an economic recovery, how long can it go? And that sort of spooked the markets. Mm-hmm. Well, we said that after 5 years. We said that after 8 years. We're saying it after 10 years. Hopefully, we're going to be saying after 12 or 15 years. Why can't we have sustained economic growth for decades? Of course we can.
Yeah.
You know, and we're showing that. As long as the consumer continues to stay engaged and has viable options when it comes to employment and generating income, I think it's great. I think that just feeds on itself. You know, I'm sort of one of these half-glass full kind of guys. If you talk positive, it gets people in a positive mood and consumer confidence mm-hmm. up. If you talk negative, recession, oh my gosh, doom and gloom on the horizon, it pulls the consumer back to get in a defensive position. But we're not there yet. We're not there yet.
Yeah. And when you get into the nitty-gritty at the trading desk, there are places still to make money. There's still good investments
around
the world.
But the trading desk is much shorter term. You know, we're living much shorter term as opposed to, are we going into a recession, especially in foreign mm-hmm. exchange? I mean, you know, you're sitting there, you know, if you can even think about tomorrow or the next day, you know, that's looking far out in the foreign exchange world. So I sort of have to put my trading cap on and get, you know, into the world that I'm sort of used to. And all of that comes together, you know, the yield curve, interest rates, you know, all of the movement, what's happening in Davos, all of that sort of ties in to where do these flows go, this world of money, this pool of money that sloshes around and comes through my market. You know, the other big driver is economic growth and what are companies out there doing? Are they buying and selling overseas? That all flows through my market too. So we sort of see it firsthand of the health of this economy. And it's strong and it's not letting up. If anything, when you're out there talking to clients, you know, they're out there and they've got their orders stacked up and, you know, they're still looking to expand and they have problems where they can't hire people. That's all good stuff. I don't see any of that diminishing mm-hmm. in our world anytime soon. So I'm still pretty much in the positive camp. Might be wrong a year from now. You know, or 2 years mm-hmm. from now, but, you know, who knows what's going to be out that far.
I saved the best for last. We look over at London, over at the UK, and boy, this Brexit thing has really come full circle for us, hasn't it?
Well, I'll tell you what, I love the British, I love people from the UK, but, you know, leave it to the UK to sit there and just jump right into the middle of it and just make a mess out of something. And you know, they're sort of like a cat. They're going to land on their feet. They're going to get through this and it's going to be fine. It isn't going to be pretty by any stretch of the imagination. But you look at Theresa May and, you know, to sit there and have her plan A come out and be voted down by 230 votes, 230 ministers of parliament, you know, members of parliament vote this thing down out of 650.
Yeah.
You know, and
the biggest defeat for her party since 1930s.
And then she comes up with plan B. And plan B is just on the fringe, a little different.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, the £65 fee that we have for European members who are not part of the UK living here, we're going to waive that. What are you talking about? You know, so two things are going to dominate the headline, I think, between now and spring. It's going to be the government shutdown, and it's going to be Brexit. And the government shutdown will resolve itself as soon as people start talking and they hammer this thing out behind the doors. Brexit is not going to resolve itself. And, you know, if you take a look at the options and where you're going to go with this, you know, soft Brexit, hard Brexit, you know, she has survived a vote of no confidence, so she's still in the game. You know, are they going to get an extension? Well, the extension, you just can't say we're going to extend. The European Union has to agree to that. And the European Union isn't going to agree mm-hmm. to that. March is the date. Now, the UK can say, let's pull it. We're not going to leave.
No Brexit.
We're just not going to leave. Yeah. You know, we're not leaving. We're going to you know, kill this thing. And the judicial committee over in the European Union back in December of 2018 said, not a problem. You guys can do that if you want. You don't need European Union approval to do that. That's a possibility too. there is so much political dealing and wheeling and dealing going on. Well, with their own party, the Tories and the Tory rebels going at it,
yeah.
You know, to sit there and cut their little deals before they back this thing. We're not even halfway through this book. And, you know, the book's got to end the end of March. We're not even halfway through this book of all the stuff that's going
to
happen.
It's going to be interesting. I've started to think in the past couple of days that maybe it's not going to happen at all. I think if I were going to bet some money, I'd bet on no Brexit.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly there's a push for a second referendum. I mean, Theresa May wants to get this through. She's got a lot of credibility if she doesn't get this thing through. You know, it's really why she came in as prime minister. That's why David Cameron stepped out. You know, she's going to be bent, you know, to get this thing through one way or the other. So I'm sure there's a lot of negotiations going on. The markets, other than the British pound and, you know, the pound type crosses and, you know, the equity markets, you know, they've reacted somewhat negatively over there, but nothing of what you're going to see as the end of March approaches. It's going to be a no Brexit deal, or it's going to be, you know, we're going to stay in the European Union. This whole thing just sort of collapsed on itself.
Don, how can people get in touch with you and have this conversation one-on-one if they want?
Sure. If you go to the AssociatedBank.com website, you can just look up Capital Markets, and my phone number is right in there, or my desk phone number right in there. You can always call the trading room, or, you know, drop me an email at, you know, donald.lloyd@associatedbank.com. And because the one thing's for sure, Steve, the volatility is out there. And companies really need to be thinking about hedging. I mean, if you're not hedging, you're at the complete mercy of the market. And that comes from currency risk, comes from your interest rate risk, comes from every commodity risk you can think of. And the markets are extremely volatile still, even through, you know, 2018 and coming into 2019. So you have this risk. If you're not hedging, or you're deciding not to hedge, at least it's a decision you're making. If you don't know what hedging is, call me, because you're not controlling your risks.
Next year, I'm going to put in another request to go to Davos. If it gets approved, you want to be my plus one, we can do some skiing.
We can share a room and we can go ski it all the time. Sounds good to me.
All right, Don, we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Steve.
And Don Lloyd, the Senior Vice President of Capital Markets, Foreign Exchange Derivatives at Associated Bank. It's our thought leader conversation. Remember, you can listen to past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. To learn more about our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of The Opening Bell. The founders of an AI-focused 401k firm called Dream Forward conducted a survey to see what 401k participants know and don't know about their plans. And the results are surprising. One major finding shows that the complex nature of 401k accounts are a much bigger barrier to saving for retirement than financial experts realize. Joining us this morning is Grant Easterbrook, the co-founder of Dream Forward. Grant, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
This is pretty cool. First of all, tell people about your company, Dream Forward, because I want them to get a sense of what you've been doing for the last couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to tell you. So, high level, we started a company called Dream Forward a couple years ago. We sell small businesses a turnkey 401k plan, fix all the obvious problems, and that it's lower cost, easier to use, less of a headache. But important for today's conversation, we also built the first, and so far as we know, the only AI dedicated to retirement and 401ks. So I know AI is a lot of buzzwords. That AI looks like online chat with customer service, but it's all programmed, available 24/7, and can talk to employees about whatever they don't understand.
And for the discussion today, we're sort of focusing on a white paper that you and your fellow co-founder put together called Retirement 2058, What Artificial Intelligence Reveals About 401k Plans. And what are the headlines here that you've discovered?
Yeah, absolutely. When we started this company, we assumed a lot of the questions would be around, you know, things like which stock should I pick, which fund should I pick, or competing financial goal. You know, I got to send a kid to college first. I got to buy a house first. Whatever your excuse is. And we found that while we do get those questions, 63% of our questions were around understanding the jargon and the administration, essentially. So questions like, how do I get my money out? What's a beneficiary? What's a QDRO? There's a lot of jargon and headaches here. And take something that seems as simple as, how do I get my money out of my 401k? Depending on your 401k plan, you may have in-service withdrawals, hardship withdrawals, which you have to prove to the tax man, loans, one or multiple, in-kind distributions. You may be old enough to qualify to not be hit with tax penalty. It's incredibly complex, and there's way too many possible answers for something that seems that simple. So we were surprised by how much of the questions were around being intimidated by the jargon of 401ks.
Yeah, and to think that those kinds of the not being able to answer those questions and not having that information actually impacting the saving process, does that happen because, and so the result is people get frustrated and they don't focus on it as much, and so they're not getting as much out of their 401k, or they just go forward and potentially make mistakes in the paperwork?
Yeah, that's a good question. So if you think about it, 401ks were originally started by a quirk of a tax law and, you know, section 401 here. And it didn't, it's grown something a lot bigger. And as a result, it's sort of written in a very jargon heavy way. It was never designed, okay, we're phasing from pensions to 401ks. How do you make 401ks an approachable product people want to use? I think it's both intimidating, and people either, so they either don't do it, they don't understand it, or they go through it not fully understanding what they're doing, and that both create problems. So I think as you think about why we're having trouble in America's retirement crisis, we used to have pensions, and we read news coverage of why pensions aren't working, tends to focus on the fact that when pensions, they managed your retirement for you. When you were over retirement age, they took care of it for you. But what actually is a bigger problem in our mind is with pensions, it was totally mandatory. You had no choice whatsoever. You had to put money away. You couldn't take money out. And now with 401ks, it's totally voluntary. You can totally ignore it. And because it's voluntary, the fact that it's so confusing and complex is a huge reason why people aren't saving enough money.
And we in the media are not doing a very good job of helping either, are we? I know some of what you've found and discussed kind of focuses on the media narrative and the coverage of this. What are we doing wrong in the media that's not helping?
Yeah, I think the unfortunate truth is that a big part of why we have this time of crisis is that we've gone from a mandatory to voluntary system. And people don't like to think about it that way. They like to think about it as sort of, we had this utopia system of pensions before where people would pay for your retirement for 10, 20, 30 years. You wouldn't have to worry about outliving your retirement. But there were also a lot of downsides. There's a little bit of nostalgia goggles there on pensions, right? You often had to work at a company for 10, 20, or 30 years before you got a single dollar. For a lot of people today, given how many times you switch jobs, that doesn't sound very appealing. And there was a huge risk that that company or government wouldn't manage their pot, the retirement pot, properly. Go ask a resident of Illinois how they feel about their quote-unquote guaranteed pension right now. They're nervous because of how underfunded it is. But what actually worked was that it was totally mandatory. You had to save. You couldn't take money out. So there's at least some pot of money there at the end. And 401ks, totally voluntary. You can totally blow it off. And that mandatory to voluntary shift is what's causing the problems.
So what needs to change here, Grant? I know you've kind of put forth some potential solutions and help here. What would be the biggest?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one, we need to drastically simplify 401k regulations to make it written in a way it's easy to understand. There shouldn't be seven possible answers to how you get money out of your 401k. There should be one answer for all plans. It needs to be a lot simpler. And then short of going back to a mandatory system, you have to design the technology around helping folks stay on track. So having the AI chat with folks, intervene if they try to lower the amount they're saving, just talk to people and be there to keep people on track, help make that voluntary system work. So simplify regulation and try to use technology to get people to voluntarily save more.
And the technology that you are using is, again, AI. Give us a sense of how It's helping. I know with your system, there's you mentioned that it's the AI chatbot for those of our listeners who aren't familiar, and it sort of guides you through the process. Let's say you're signing up, puts up some warnings about things that you need to take into consideration, those kinds of things that are missing when you just look at it, that look at the paperwork yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. So traditionally 401ks, they're a paperwork heavy process. Our whole business model is it's online, simple, quick. And what an AI chat looks like is basically imagine that live chat support. You're typing, talking to a rep in the lower right corner of your screen. The AI looks like that, except instead of talking to a human, it's just programmed by an AI. So that's what a chat bot is. And the whole idea of how it helps is that imagine you're going through this. If you use a traditional 401k and you do something negative, like you lower the amount you're saving, try to cash out, you just go through that process and nothing will stop you. And what we do is if you try to lower the amount you're saving, the AI will pop up and say, wait a minute, why'd you do that? How can I help you? What's on your mind? Try to talk you through your financial decisions and try to keep you on track. So that's sort of just what we're trying to do with the technology.
If none of this changes, we're headed for a pretty serious future, aren't we? I mean, already not enough people are saving for their retirement. I don't know the stats on how many people have 401k plans. I know more than half the country is not in the stock market, so it has to be pretty high. But we're headed for a nasty future here if we don't get control of some of this, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe the exact date that experts predict is like 2034, maybe off a couple of years one way or the other, where Social Security is supposed to run out of money. So not only we have Social Security running out of money, and given that fact, people aren't saving enough is a huge problem, right? If the government system is running low on funds, a lot of state-level systems like Illinois and New Jersey, their pensions are underfunded, people are going to need to rely on their own savings to have a comfortable retirement here. And so if you aren't saving now, it's going to add up. You've got to start saving your 401k. I know it can feel like you can't afford to save even 3 or 5% of your salary, but think about it as a gift to your future self. You cannot rely on the government to manage your retirement.
Grant, talk to us a little bit more about Dream Forward. This has me convinced that I think I need AI helping me. Is this something that businesses are adopting, and that's how we have to take advantage of your technology, or is it something we can do on our own?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are a B2B business in that we our client is a small business owner. Part of our business model is to make it easier for a small business to offer a 401k by lowering the cost, making it less of a headache, easier for the business to sign up. The stats are a little different depending on who you look at, but about, let's say, 33%, 35% of private sector American workers don't even have a 401k. A lot of small businesses don't offer it because they perceive it to be too expensive or too complex. So part of our mission as a company is to make it easier for that small business owner to offer a 401k plan to close that coverage gap. So there are a lot of employees who don't have access to a 401k today, roughly about a third. And so we want to make that process easier for a small business owner to give that to their employees.
And folks can head over to dreamforward.io for more information on your company. Grant, we appreciate you being with us and sharing some of this insight with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Grant Easterbrook is the co-founder of Dream Forward, a 401k plan provider with the first AI chatbot dedicated to retirement. Again, the website is dreamforward.io.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street, flat to positive open on Wall Street, with Dow and S&P futures flat this morning. NASDAQ futures up nearly a half a percent. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Weather played a role in the soybean market again yesterday at the Board of Trade. Poor crop weather reducing yield potential in the South American soybean crop. And traders continue to watch for any developments in U.S. trade relations with soybean buyer China. At the end of the day, the March soybean futures up 5 3/4 cents. The March wheat contract ended up 4 3/4 cents, and corn finished down 0.25 cents in the trade yesterday. but continued dryness in the soybean production areas of Brazil concerning traders, and too wet in Argentina, also of concern. Turning to the livestock trade, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, live cattle futures rose yesterday, led higher by a bargain-buying bounce in the feeder cattle contract. Feeder cattle market, which jumped 1.5% yesterday, was sharply oversold after the front-month contract hit its lowest since May 24th on Tuesday, according to traders. Live cattle futures finished the day up 42 cents at 125.55. And hog futures were weaker yesterday. The February lean hog contract down 70 cents. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more headlines before we leave you this morning. As the federal government shutdown enters a second month, economists say it could pose a threat to the wider economy. The biggest effect is likely to be the cutback in federal spending. But consumer spending is another important factor. When government employees spend less, stores and restaurants that serve them suffer. So do landlords and lenders that do business with federal workers. Most of the restaurant meals missed and hotel stays canceled will never be made up. Nearly 800,000 people affected by the partial government shutdown. Verizon is cutting jobs from its media division. The media group that includes Yahoo, AOL, and Huffington Post is set to slash 7% of its workforce this week. That's around 800 people. The layoffs are part of a refocus on digital advertising with an eye toward future growth. And BuzzFeed is also cutting its staff by nearly 15%. In a memo to employees, the BuzzFeed CEO explained that the layoffs would happen next week, eliminating around 250 positions. He said the layoffs were meant to allow BuzzFeed to sustain operations and profit for its multi-revenue model as they try to avoid trying to raise funds again. The company cut 100 jobs in 2017, and this 2019 round will be their biggest layoffs to date. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, January 24th. A couple of big things on the schedule today, including a report on initial jobless claims. We'll also get a report on leading economic indicators. The EIA natural gas report is due. So is the EIA petroleum status report. The Kansas City Fed Manufacturing Index also coming today. We'll get a shot at the Fed balance sheet and money supply as well. On the earnings calendar, a busy day for earnings. American Airlines, Bristol-Myers, JetBlue Airways, McCormick, Southwest Air, Union Pacific, Alaska Air, E-Trade, Intel, Starbucks, Discover Financial, W.W. Grainger, and Associated Bank are all reporting quarterly earnings today. Lots of things that could move the markets on this Thursday, January 24th.